Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SMB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just one minor note, join us with a talk guest every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either join us on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. Call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the Talk Show website at www.talkshoe.com and search for call ID 17702. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to reach me via Skype, my Skype ID is FranzGames, FranzGames. And of course, you can follow me on the Twitters. My account there is sfuoncall. Also, you can follow me on my personal account, which is Paul Franz, PaulFranz. So to find me there, just go to twitter.com/PaulFranz. And of course, this lovely talkcast gets turned to a podcast available on iTunes and various feeds around the net. Not much happened this week at ADB, but one of the things that definitely did occur, which was the start of the Sapphire Star Tournament. The tree has been announced, and people need to get on the road and get their games set up. My games are set up for Monday at 8 o'clock, which is going to be interesting because there's also going to be another game, Peter Bikia versus I forget who, also going to be playing at 8 p.m. Eastern Time Monday night. So if you want to pick a choice, most probably better watch Peter's than mine. But mine's going to be a Saltorian versus IAC because I'm going to be playing against Paul Graves. So it's going to be Paul Franz versus Paul Graves. Ha! Dueling of the Pauls. It's going to be such an appalling situation. I know that was a bad joke. It's a dad joke. I'm a dad. I'm allowed. Obviously, also Capital 53 went out the door. They were printing it, as I said last week. They were getting everything ready for that. Obviously, Steve Petrick is still working on the Grandmaster Starship book. Gene, obviously, managing the Facebook page and also the Twitter feed. And also trying to keep the spam assault down to a minimal in the BBS. Also, this past week, one thing they've been doing in the BBS is trimming the topics. They ran out of posts. This current software, which is very old at this point, only allows 200,000 posts. So we're deleting some of the older topics that have been dead for a while, and they're just being cleaned up. I've already archived anything that they plan on deleting when it comes to SMB Online, so no worries there. Moving onward to the SMB Online tournaments, obviously the only one really running is the Sapphire Star Tournament, which the matchups have already been announced, and multiple players have already set up. There was one delay going to be with Bill Scheller, who's going to be playing against Majid Farsi, which is interesting. He doesn't know who Majid Farsi is, I do, because he is located in the UK, so it's going to be always an interesting challenge to get those guys all set up for playing. But fortunately, the fourth week allows for 3 weeks, and Bill Shell is going to be gone for two of those. So they're going to have to really push it on that last week. As long as they schedule it, they'll be fine. Moving on to the library report. Me and Frank have got a system in place. I still need to automate it a little more. I think some of it won't be, I'm not sure I'm going to be able to automate. I'm hoping I can. The main thing is going to be automating the checking of the update to the library list and make sure that those updates are valid. The entries are valid. There's as many screwed up in formatting, things like that. The updating of from his account to the actual SMB Online account is solved. It's fine. It's beautiful. It's no problems. But we'll just have to wait and see how this whole thing works out. I think it will go well. The only issue currently is that there was no additional conversions completed. There were just updates to the current conversion. There were some cleanups of the current third gens. And with that, that is the news for this week. It is me. That's the one, the only, the Paul Friends welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight we have Barry Kirk, who is our resident Omega expert, that we'll be discussing the Kolaghar tournament tactics this evening, and maybe even get into some other things. You never know. Sorry. Russ mentioned that he'd uninstall Chrome. It was not for a few on call. And I would do the same. Actually, if I didn't have that, if I didn't use YouTube Live. Sorry, you were just complaining about the change to SFU On Call and how it's we lost some of the control, and that has definitely caused some issues. But good. Russ saying you also can hear me on YouTube Live because I'm also dual streaming this. So if anyone who doesn't want to join us at Talk Show, but just wants to listen in or even want to chat over there, because every once in a while I keep an eye on for any chat, and usually there's nothing for YouTube Live, but I still keep an eye on it, and I do broadcast live on YouTube, so that I do have that multiple way of doing that. But anyhow, moving onward and forward from those lovely, lovely thoughts of, let's stop there. I might as well bring in the one, the only, the Barry Kirk. How you doing, Barry?
Hey, am I muted or unmuted?
Well, I hear you, so that means you're unmuted.
I was waiting for a response, so yeah. Okay. So I had suggested to Paul a few days ago, or last week, about doing since he had done a whole series on all the tournament ships, I said, well, we did some experimental tournament cruisers with the Omegas a couple of years back, and thought maybe we should do some strategy on those, because that is near and dear to my heart.
Understood.
I think last week we did the Mazaron.
Yep.
And I figured this week we'd do the Kolaghar. And actually, the Kolaghar is my favorite of the Omega tournament cruisers. And I should say that's the one I originally created. Let me rephrase that. I was given a whole bunch of tournament cruisers. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say who they came from. I'm not going to say that.
Well, it wouldn't surprise me. It came from Ken Burnside, because Ken Burnside did the original Omega tournament cruisers back when he ran an experimental tournament. Experimental tournament at Origins. And I was I was there.
I don't think I had permission to mention his name.
I'm not sure why that would be a problem, because not like some people who are completely banned from all existence when it comes to ADB stuff.
Yeah.
There's at least one person I know of.
So, based on those experimental cruisers, the Kolaghar that I got from Ken, and I basically made two minor tweaks to it, and voila, that was the one that I originally put in Starfleet Battles Online. And the two tweaks I put on it were there's three weapon systems on the Kolaghar. It's got micro phasers, it's got for its phasers, it's got antimatter cannons for its heavy weapons, and then its tertiary weapon is called an antimatter cloud generator. And the antimatter cloud generator is the closest equivalent in the alpha octet would be the ESG. It's damaged on drone hits. It runs off a capacitor. There's a 32 impulse delay in there. So there are some similarities with the ESG. And in the rule book, the original the original Tullegar had a antimatter cloud generator with a 4-point capacitor, but there's also mentioned that they increased the size of the capacitor to 6 points of energy. I can't remember the exact date when that happened, but it was basically an upgrade.
Right.
And I gave the Tullegar that 6-point upgrade. And to tell the truth, going back to the 4-point might not be a bad idea.
Yeah, I was going to say, the question is, did it need upgrade to 6 points?
It probably doesn't. So I'm probably going to back that off. But we did play test it, and to tell you the truth, that the difference between 6 and 4 points really is a minor tweak, because at 4 points it can do what it needs to do, and 6 it doesn't make it any more potent, or not much more potent.
Oh, agreed.
So the other thing I did was that I had a problem with the way the rules were written in the Omega rulebook for the microphasers. And what they did was they said with the microphasers, they're kind of like a regular phaser. There's a microphaser 1 and a microphaser 3. It runs off a capacitor just like a regular phaser. And the only other difference between it and a regular phaser is the firing table. Whereas the microphaser is hit or miss. And if it hits, it does full damage. If it misses, it does no damage. And the longer the range, the less damage it does.
Mm-hmm.
But it's within bounds. At short ranges, it does a little more damage than an alpha phaser. At longer ranges, it does a little less. But it's in the ballpark. It's not overrated. It's not underrated. It's just about where it needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
But somewhere in there, Bruce Gross said, oh, and by the way, microphasers damage plasma torpedoes 1-to-1 instead of 2-to-1 like all other phasers. I don't know why that rule is there.
Right.
And all of a sudden, the Tullegar, which it balanced against all other ships, and hey, it's balanced and it looks good, and then, oh, against anybody who uses plasma torpedoes, it destroyed them.
Mm-hmm. That's
so. I said, as a tournament special rule, which I think should tell the truth, that should be the case for
a general overrule change in the rule. I know
is that is just hey, it damages plasmas just like any other phaser.
Right.
There was no reason for that rule. It was just, hey, let's put that in there just because we can. There's no balance reason for it. If anything, it's completely unbalancing.
Oh, understood.
Because what it means is that, yeah.
Paul,
you and I have talked about that a lot. So you understand my reasoning. I'm just saying this for the general audience.
Oh, understood. Understood. The big question, obviously, is was there a reason to begin with for having it so it was 1-to-1? Was there an issue that they found with the other plasma-like races for the Omega?
It's not mentioned in the rule book at all. It just says, and it damages plasmas 1-to-1. And it doesn't give any reasons as to why. That's not listed. And I looked through the entire rule book. I could not find that.
Mm-hmm.
I've talked to Bruce Graw. He didn't remember any reason for it.
Okay.
But his original notes went bye-bye with his hard drive.
Oh, understood. Understood. I assume that that basically currently the Petrick's reasoning is that that's the rule, basically. There shouldn't be a difference rule between the tournament and regular play. Yeah,
Petrick said was that that's the rule, so that's what we're going with. And it's like, but if you put that special rule in there, I found that the tournament cruiser that we have wins about half its games and loses about half its games against alpha, just about every alpha top 10 ship. So that's a good indication that, hey, this is a balanced ship that can be
used. Balanced ship for fighting against alphas, yes.
Against alphas, right.
Because that's always the question in my mind. Because we've had this discussion multiple times, and which is,
I know,
having integrated versus keeping it separate. I always thought it should be kept separate, and then we can tweak the rule to all we want, and you know, for this is Omega only, and also any tweaks to the rules would be, in my mind, at least balancing for the overall rule book, possibly maybe some desperate hope. Maybe very desperate, that the rule book will actually be looked at and tweaked and fixed for those issues that we found with the Omega rules.
The only thing is that here we've got a rule book that is, everybody knows that the Omega ships are completely, there's a lot of the races that kind of work, and a lot of them that, no way in hell, not even close.
Oh, understood.
And so, obviously it's flawed, it was never really play tested, and
I agree that a lot of the play testing of the Omegas was very poorly done.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right. So, certainly when a Singer Destroyer, 90-point BTV, can take out an Andromedan Intruder from 15 hexes away...
That's a bad thing, especially since my understanding is when it comes to the history of the Andromedans and the Omega Octant, the Omegas struggled muchly until they got the not the PFs, the PF-like ships. I forgot.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I forgot those what they were called.
Whatever they are, they're... Yeah, and I don't mind that their PS are a little bit different. That's okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I like a lot of this flavor, you know. The fact that every Omega race, or most of them, there's about five or six different... And one of the things I thought was kind of fun was that in Alpha, every Phaser 1, every Phaser 2, every Phaser 3... aren't all identical. If one race has a Phaser 1, everybody else's Phaser 1 is identical. In Omega, you've got about six different varieties of phasers, and they all play differently. And that, I think, is an interesting flavor, but they didn't... If you balanced it, you know, you put a little variation here or there, but you keep them within reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think we all can agree that the playtesting need more work need to be done when it comes to balance and playtesting the ships to achieve a decent balance when it comes to overarching weapons and interactions between the weapons and the ships that those were actually applied on, because obviously part of the weapons themselves is the arcs of those weapons and what their limitations are, you know, when it comes to their arcs.
Yeah.
Because I know there are things like for the Federation, photon torpedoes are always were FA ARC. You know, that was very limit. There's a limitation. You never saw like FA plus R, FA plus L ARCs for photon torpedoes.
Correct.
You know.
Correct. No photon torpedo has more than a 120 ARC.
Right. Exactly. And that was kind of, that's a function. That's almost kind of a, that's how you define a photon torpedo, is a limitation of those arcs versus a disruptor. A disruptor can have 180 degrees or possibly more. Degree arc.
I've seen FX disruptors.
Yeah, for disruptors, I've seen FH plus L and FH plus R on some.
Yeah, that's FX.
No, I don't think I've ever seen FX.
I have. The Lyran Democratic Republic has a couple of FX disruptors.
Good point. Good point.
Yeah.
I was thinking about like D5, one of the D5s. I think it was.
Yes, the D5 does have an FH plus L, and then the other, and then two of them are FH plus R.
Yep.
Yeah. Scary that I remember all this stuff.
Well,
can't remember what I had for dinner, but I can remember ships that I haven't played in.
Oh, that's going to be interesting when you get older and you start forgetting. You really start forgetting things, and you'll still remember how to play Starfleet Battles, but you won't remember your kids' names.
Yeah. Oh, who are you? Oh, you're my daughter. Okay. Oh, yeah. Yeah. But I remember that D5 had an FH plus L and two on the FH plus L and two on the FH plus R.
Mm-hmm.
And five P1s and four P3s. And I think they got rid of the waste phasers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Dave. That's a neat ship. Dave's just mentioning that the F6 has two FX disruptors itself. You know, the F6, the Fregnaut?
Yes.
Yeah, that was a cool ship.
Yeah.
But to get back to our topic at hand.
Yeah.
This is the color guard.
So we have microphasers, which I think is a neat concept.
Oh, yeah. An all or nothing. It's a hit phaser, you know.
Yeah.
You hit or you miss.
Right. So, yeah. And it averages out. To about at ranges 2 and under, it averages out to about a half a point more per phaser one than a regular P1, and at ranges 3 and higher, it averages out to about a half a point less, roughly. So you know it's within the ballpark. It is a much better drone-killing weapon than a phaser because it's hit or miss, and at range 1, a microphaser P1 does exactly 6 points of damage in this automatic hit. And a microphaser P3 does 4 points of damage in automatic hit at range 1.
Yeah.
So, in that sense,
And the crazy thing is, for all those stinking microphasers, is microphasers versus cloak. I'm not sure if you noticed. Range 0 is 1 to 7 to hit.
I did notice that. It is really good in a electronic warfare. If somebody drops a weasel, it does have some built-in ECCM, essentially, effectively.
Mm-hmm.
And I think PM3s at range 0 or even 8. So that's
you're right.
Nice.
It is. It's 1 to 8. For the M3s.
Yeah. However, having said that, at range 2, the microphaser 3s drop off to 3 points, which means that a single microphaser 3 cannot kill any drone, guaranteed at range 2, whereas a regular phaser 3 has a 50-50 shot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that is a trade-off right there, is that you have to get the range one shot because the range two shot isn't going to get it done.
Yeah, so that just means that, one, you have to worry about timing because you don't want to go from range three to range two to range zero.
Right.
But at the same time, you don't, unlike the normal phaser threes, you don't have to worry about having a second shot because with a phaser three, you have to possibly do range two so that if it gets to range one, then you can finally kill it.
Yeah.
Versus if you only go for range one, there's a chance, there's a one-third chance that you actually will fail.
Right.
In which case, you could be possibly screwed. Obviously, depending upon facing and all that kind of thing.
Right. But the 1-1 against plasmas just is, it makes any plasma race useless against the Telegar. When the Telegar cruiser has 8 PM1s and 2 PM3s, which means that range one front center line, you do 56 points of damage guaranteed, no more, no less.
Right.
And that is takes an EPT Plasma S and reduces it to a 4-point warhead. So
yeah,
you can get that Plasma S to EPT and front center line it at range one, you could pretty much plow right through it and take virtually no damage.
Right.
And you can battery, and with 4 points of batteries, you can battery the rest.
And Barry, that's not the big point. That's not the big issue. The big the big issue with that is that you no longer have to decide on whether you're going to fire at the plasma or fire at the ship. You can do both.
Yes. You have enough faith.
You have enough phasers. Yeah. You can do enough damage to the plasma so that you take very little damage from the plasma and still have enough.
Without using all your phasers.
Right. Without using all your phasers and still be able to damage the other person's ship. Because that's one of the reasons for the plasmas. As you launch a plasma, one is for obviously mobile terrain. But in addition to mobile terrain, it's to force your opponent to fire their weapons at the plasma instead of you.
Right.
So that means you can come in closer and you can fire your phasers at them while you're firing at their plasma.
Right. So that's that. Now, everything else about the ship is really neat, and let me discuss some of that neatness. So you have these antimatter cannons. And antimatter cannons there's four firing modes for them. There's a single standard, a double shot standard, a single caseless, and a double shot caseless. And let me describe the different firing modes and what they do.
Yes.
Single shot, whether it's standard or caseless, does 6 points of damage if it hits. It is more accurate than a photon torpedo. At range six, it hits on a 1-4. At range three, it hits on a 1-5. At range zero, the double shot can be fired for an auto hit. Single shots do 6 points of damage. Double shots do 12 points of damage. So you can kind of think of it as a photon light. It takes 3 points of energy to arm a single shot, 6 points of power to arm a double shot. Single shots can be held for 1 point of power. Double shots can be held for two. So other than it's a little bit more accurate and does a little less damage and takes a little less power to charge, it's pretty much identical to a photon light. It does have a faster firing rate than a Photon, but not as fast as the Disruptor. It's a single-turn arming weapon with a 32-impulse firing delay. So it's, and you can hold an overload just like a Photon, and you can take a single shot and overload it later, either during energy allocation or with reserve power. So there's all that stuff that parallels a Photon, but as a light. You have four of them, and their firing arcs are, you have two that are FA, one that is LFL, and the other one is RFR. So unless you can get a centerline shot, you're probably only going to get three into arc. So it's a little lighter damage than a Photon, and you're not guaranteed to be able to get all four of them off at once. So that does make it weaker than a Photon, but as I said, it can fire faster.
Right.
Slightly, because 32 impulse kind of splits the difference between single turn army and double and two turn army. It also allows you the strategy of don't charge it and then let it sit empty and then put the power in on a turn that you can use it, letting the 32 impulse clock run out. So if you fire it late in the turn, you can just skip the arming at the next turn if you need, and you don't have to worry about arming it on a turn that you're not going to use it, which is kind of nice. The caseless mode does the identical damage, has the identical accuracy of the standard mode. 6 points of damage if it hits for a single, 12 for a double. And the caseless uses less energy to arm. 2 points of energy to arm a single shot, 4 points of energy to arm a double shot, which makes it 50% more power efficient. And the caseless mode has an 8-impulse firing delay. It's like, well, if caseless, and it's the same holds cost for standard or caseless, 1 point for singles, 2 points for doubles. So you're looking at this going, well, why would anybody ever arm a standard instead of a caseless? If the caseless does identical damage, identical accuracy, faster firing rate, and takes less power to arm. Well, the caseless can't damage shields.
Explain how this works when it comes to versus a shield, because I read that part in the tactics paper, and it's crazy how it works.
I know. The way it works is you take all your caseless shots and you figure out how much damage they did, and you add all that damage together. So let's say you had two caseless double shots and they both hit. That does 24 points of damage. And let's say it goes against a 20-point shield. You subtract the 20-point shield from the 24 points of damage, just like you normally would, and you do four internals. But it didn't damage the shield. So he took four internals, but he still has a 20-point shield untouched. And that includes reserve reinforcements, too. So if he reinforced with 4 points of reinforcement, that 4 points of reinforcement is still there. Now, he may have, if he used batteries to do that reinforcement, the batteries are drained, but the reinforcement's still there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So let's say you have 24 points of damage on a 20-point shield, do four internals. And let's say you fire a standard antimatter cannon, single shot, doing 6 points, and a whole bunch of TM1s, doing an additional 18 points of damage. So you have, from the standard shot, and the phasers, you've got an additional 24 points of damage. Ordinarily, it was 24 and 24, you'd make it 48. But just a 20-point shield, subtract the 20-point shield, you have 28 internals and no shield. Here, what you do is the caseless always goes first. So it did 24 minus the shield, 24 internals. Then your 24 points of other stuff goes against the shield, knocks that down. So you have four internals from one, four internals from the other, but they're combined to be a single volley. Weird. Yep. But what it means is that your shield was used twice. Your shield got to be used.
Your opponent's shield got to be used twice. Yeah, the same box on that shield got used twice. It's
yes,
crazy.
Right.
But there is one benefit. Because I was just did a quick read on the caseless, and after you fire with a case on it, you can fire it 8 impulses later using caseless.
Correct.
Which is something to keep in mind that
yes.
Even if you fire it, you know, with a standard, you don't have to wait 32 impulses to fire it as caseless.
Right. But if you fire a caseless, you still have to wait 32 impulses before you can fire standard.
Right.
Yeah.
So switching back and forth is not easy.
Now the other thing is, if you start arming it as caseless, you cannot convert it to standard unless you discharge the weapon
right.
and rearm it.
Right. It's just
now, discharging it doesn't cause a delay, it just means you lost all your energy.
Right. It's kind of like a photon torpedo, where if you switch it to proxy mode, you create a proxy plasma torpedo. The only way to get rid of a proxy is either to fire it or to discharge it. So you can
You can wait an impulse. You can change it in EA. But you're thinking of an overload. An overload, once overloaded, you cannot unoverload a photon.
Right.
But you can change a prox to a standard and back again. But you have to do it during EA.
Okay. Tells you how often I fire photons.
Yeah. But in any case, so yeah, you can't mix and match the modes. You can't have antimatter cannon where it's got one shot of standard and one shot of caseless. You can't do that. Both shots have to be caseless or standard. So, but what a flexible, interesting weapon.
Oh, agreed. And as you pointed out in the article, it's like having two weapons in one.
Yes. Now, as I said, the downside is that with the firing arcs, which is a plus and a minus, but it means that you're not going to be able to get that super crunch of a photon torpedo doing 64 points of damage. It just doesn't happen.
Right.
But you can do more than a disruptor. But it costs you more, too. So, you know, disruptors at close range can do 40 points of damage for 16 points of energy, whereas here, if you have three of them, you're only doing 36 points of damage, but for 6 times 3 is 18 points. So it's less efficient than a disruptor in standard mode.
True.
So you have actually less crunch than a disruptor ship, unless you get the center line.
Right. There's some there's minor overlap. At range 6, a single shot will do as much damage as an overload. Oh, that's true. That's disruptors.
Yeah, I'm talking disruptor at range two, or one or two, I think. Does 10 points of damage each?
At range one does 10 points of damage. I think I'm pretty sure disruptor at range two does 8.
It does, yes. Okay, so then you're 32 points versus 36. So it does a little more than a disruptor, but then again, as I said, it takes more energy.
Right.
But it can be held. So it's in the ballpark.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Okay. The antimatter cloud generator
this is an interesting little weapon.
It is. It's the only weapon in the game that has a miss and a near miss capability.
And yeah, that was one thing I was reading through after I read your tactics manual, tactics paper, sorry, about that. And it's like, whoa. It just comes down to, I was reading this. Also, I was reading about the heats, torpedoes. You know, it's kind of redundant there. Because the T stands for torpedo. But anyhow. And I come to the realization that a lot of these weapons, at least like the cloud generator and the heat, they're not designed for duels. They're designed particularly with fleet engagements in mind. For example, the heats, you can change targets.
Yeah.
Of that torpedo in mid-flight.
Mm-hmm.
That only matters if you have more than one ship.
Actually, there is another reason for that. You can use a heat and you can give it a ballistic targeting, and then now you have to program the change of target before you launch. But you can give it a ballistic target when you launch it and change targets later. Here's an interesting tactic. You fire a whole bunch of them ballistically targeted at a ship at, moderate close range at a slow-moving ship. That slow-moving ship drops a wild weasel. But they're ballistically targeted.
Right.
They don't track the weasel.
Right.
You phaser down the weasel, and if you've timed it right, the weasel is voided, and all of a sudden it changed tracking. Oh, there's no weasel.
And also, couldn't you, in theory, basically have a ballistic target which is past the ship and then have it so it then turned around and came in and hit a different shield?
Yes. You could do that, too.
Yeah, but yeah. Getting back to the ACGs.
The other thing you can do with the heat, and one last thing, is that you can fire heats that are not in arc.
Right.
Ballistically targeted,
right.
And then have them change target.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
So that's an interesting tactic.
But that brings us back to the ACG. The reason why I was saying that about the fleets is because of the near misses and the miss. If you're firing an ACG into the middle of, like, one of your opponent's fleets, not so bad.
Well, the ACG really wasn't meant to be used against what it really isn't designed for is it's not designed to be used against ships. Remember, anything with a shield gets to pick where the damage goes against.
That's true.
Okay. So I've got 5 down shields and I get hit with an ACG. I can take all the damage on the one shield that's up, even if it's not facing.
Right. That's true. Got a good point there.
And right. Now, the other thing is it runs off a capacitor. And unlike an ESG, I don't have to use the whole capacitor. I could use 1 point, 2 points, 3 points, up to the full amount that's in the capacitor when I discharge it.
Right.
And it has a 32 impulse delay.
Of course.
But it's an area of effect weapon. It damages everything in the hex that it hits.
Yep.
And does the same amount of damage, which means that if there's mega drone stack coming at you, and it doesn't affect the plasma torpedoes,
right?
But only phasers do. But there's that mega stack of drones, so that Kazini tournament cruiser has done a maximum effort. His weasel his scatter pack has blossomed. He's got 10 drones headed your way, and you get them all in the same hex, and you drop an ACG, and it hits all 10 drones, and poof, they're all gone.
Which, what that does, it does the same thing that the Dromedans T-bomb does.
Yes.
In my mind.
But it's better than a T-bomb because it's direct fire, and it's instant, and you can...
Oh, understood.
You don't have to drop a sheet. Well, yes.
But the effect is the same in that it forces people who are flying, seeking weapons that are drone-based, they can't make basically a stack of them. You have to spread them out.
Correct.
Because that is the effect of the Andromeda T-bomb, because the Andromedans don't have to drop their T-panels to put out the T-bomb. People, you know, especially the Zinni, for example, you don't put a huge stack of drones because one T-bomb can take them all out.
Correct. Now, the other nice thing about the ACG is, unlike a T-bomb, I can recharge it.
Right. Understood. But, you know, but my point was that it has the same effect, which is the whole idea of spreading out. You have to spread out your seeking webs. You can't stack them.
And it also can be same against fighters.
Right. Well, there they make fighters in the tournament.
Yes.
Now,
well, the Hydrans would have to.
Right.
The Hydrans would have to.
Yeah, but they're the only ones that even have fighters. The rest of them are just shuttles. And the only reason you do it against a shuttle, in my mind, is that if there were suicides. Or possibly a scatter pack.
Right.
Which is, talk about killing, really killing things. Wow. This means the scatter packs has launched and then launch the drones immediately, kind of thing, instead of having the roving T-bomb, command mines. Is what I'm thinking of.
Now the downside of the ACG is that, and this is one that can bite you in the ass, is that its best accuracy is at range one, and at range one it hits. It uses two dice and it hits on an 11. So if you roll a 12, it's a near miss. And what do I mean by
and
near
what,
miss?
And Venom, what prize do you win for the near miss?
Okay. You then roll a die, and whatever number that is the direction. You walk the damage one hex that direction, and that's the hex that damages.
And what does that mean, my dear?
Okay. On your map, most Starfleet battle maps have a section where they have a number, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, numbering the hex sides or directions. So I think one is north, and then two goes clockwise. Is it?
Right.
Clockwise direction?
Yeah, basically one is going to be direction A,
yeah.
Two direction B, three direction C, four direction D, five direction E, and six direction F.
Direction, yeah. Right. So you roll a die, and that's the direction it goes by one hex.
And that means that you actually could kill yourself.
No, it actually, if it rolls into your own hex, mm-hmm. it has no effect. It will not damage your own ship. It just doesn't happen.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, total miss is you do that process twice.
Which actually means that you could possibly hit the hex you wanted to hit to begin with.
Yeah, you can get a total miss and still do full damage against the hex that was your target. If you rolled like a 1 and a 4. But any case, the point I'm trying to make is that there's that mega drone stack of death one hex away from you, and you fire and you roll a 12, and oops, you missed it.
Right.
If you are going to get hit by that mega drone stack, the next impulse, that's a gamble. You've got a 1 in 36 chance of not killing the and getting hit by that stack of death, you die. And yep. you've taken a 1 in 36 chance that you died. So, it's better than the odds for a displacement device, but you could do a burnside maneuver there, effectively. Rolling D6s.
Yeah, but here's the thing. With a displacement device, even if you fail and you... I think self-disdev, when it comes to self-disdev, if you fail, I don't think you ever move. I'm pretty sure you don't. But if you do it against someone else's ship, in theory, you could, even though you fail, you could actually do a random displacement, and then the random displacement might actually go the direction you wanted to go. Even random displacement would allow you to say, okay, well, if it's going direction 3, it's going to go direction 6.
Right.
So you still have some minor control where you can kind of jerk it to the correct direction.
Yeah.
But anyhow. Yes.
Anyhow, so, other thing is, I'm going to grab a bottle of water. The cloud, and beyond range 1, the chances go start to drop down. I think range 3 or so, it actually has a decent chance of a hit out to range 10.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, I don't have the table in front of me, so I'm going by memory. What is the chance of the hit at range 10?
For the ACG?
Yeah.
That would be 6.
6.
Yep.
2D6s.
Mm-hmm.
So not even a 50% chance of hitting at range 10. So...
Well, yeah, you don't get the almighty 7, which has the most probability of any single number.
Right.
Which I don't know what that means for the rest of them combinatorially when it comes to percentage chance of, getting 6 or less versus the rest.
But on the other hand, if the drones are spread out in a cloud... it's range 10. It's like, what the heck? I'll drop it in the middle of a cloud of drones. You might want it. It almost might be worth it to drop it into an empty hex with all the surrounding hexes with drones, because you're more likely to get a near miss than you are to get a hit and have it walk into at least part of the cloud. So it's an interesting weapon.
Oh, agreed.
But I think I'm going to back the capacitor down to 4.
That's the one thing I did look up. They upgraded to 6 as of Y-143.
Yeah. I guess that's why. But, still, four is, that still gives you, it does twice the damage that the amount of power you put in. So,
right, it still kills the drones, still kills the shuttles. It just means less damage to
a fighter, but it'll cripple a fighter.
Right.
Yeah. So, now, unfortunately, after Steve Petrick said, "Thou shalt not," I went back into the tournament cruiser and I said, "Okay, I got to take out the, I got to take out the special rule for the phasers." So I put that back in as 1-1. Now, what do I do? So I said, I need to gut most of the phasers in the ship so that I don't have these phasers that are so boogered. So I think I reduced that ship to 4 PM1s to 2 PM3s, which is like less phasers than a Romulan. And then I gave it an additional antimatter cannon.
Mm-hmm.
So three in the front and then one LSL and one RFR, so that but that ship never was fly. I tried it and tried it and it just wasn't workable. So I think I gave you the death file if you want to put the original one that I thought was so nice back in, but I don't know if Steve Petrick would allow that.
Right. Okay.
Because as is, the one that's on Starfleet Battles Online right now is unplayable. I know it's unplayable. But I had one that worked real well, but I wasn't allowed to put it in there.
Yeah. What did you originally base your... do you remember what the original Kelligar tournament cruiser was based off of?
The tournament cruiser was essentially the same one that Ken Burnside provided to me.
Right.
Yeah, and the fact that PDF is one I just emailed to you.
Mm-hmm. Understood. I'm just doing a quick check here of the original, the PDF you currently sent me versus the normal Kelligar heavy cruiser. And it looks like it has one extra impulse, one extra battery, some extra warp.
30 warp instead of 24.
But right now it has the same amount of phasers as the normal heavy cruiser.
Yes. Yeah. The only differences are in the power systems between. They brought out the standard, the power systems and tournament standards, two tractors, four shuttles, all that is standard Kelligar. I think, I'm not sure the standard Kelligar might have four shuttles. I don't know.
Yeah, the standard Kelligar has four shuttles.
It does have seven transporters.
Well... I would fuss at anyone who would increase the number of transporters just because of that's based on the ship. Each ship has a different number of transporters. You have Klingon who has lots of transporters versus the Orion who has what? Two?
Yeah.
You know?
I don't remember how many
of those had. That's one of the things that
not many.
I can understand batteries being tweaked to be more consistent. Possibly some power to be tweaked. And Lord knows, we know that for the Archeo, Tholian, the shields themselves were tweaked. But things like transporters, you don't tweak transporters. Jeez, I have seven transporters.
Well, I didn't tweak the number of transports that were on the standard Kelligar ship. It's
right.
Yeah. Like, okay, whatever. It's not like that. That's a huge deal, one way or the other. I mean, it's nice, but
right.
more extra hits. It's padding. Now the ship does have a turn mode of D, which is significant.
Come on.
But then again,
Barry, the Saltorian has a turn mode of D. The Gorn has a turn mode of D. The Federation has a turn mode of D.
Oh, I'm not complaining about it. Right. I'm saying I think that's a reasonable turn mode for that ship. I think it's very nice in sense that because it's most of its weapons are 180-degree firing arc, other than the antimatter cannons, but you have an antimatter cannon facing L and another antimatter cannon facing R. So even though you have a lower turning or a slower turning mode, you can very often get shots off to the left side or the right side, or and the cloud generators can fire their 180 degrees. One is LS, one is RS.
Right.
So the firing arcs of the ship kind of make up for the turn mode.
Oh, agreed.
Yeah. But
very, you know, it's a very interesting ship, and as you said, it's pretty balanced as it is.
Yeah, it's possible. Maybe just keeping the 6-point capacitor might be a good idea, because the cloud generator really can't do that much extra. It's more of a sandpaper thing.
Yeah, but at the same time, here's
not direct.
Here's the thing about keeping the 6, and that is that since it basically is a capacitor, which doesn't have to be used in full like the ESG, that means you get to kind of dull it out a little bit at a time.
Yes. So you're spending less power on it.
Right.
Since it starts fully charged.
Exactly. And that's the point, which is that it gives it more capabilities because of it can charge it all the way up to 6, like at the beginning of the game, and then just kind of dole it out a little bit at a time.
Right.
Obviously, it's not gonna be like 1 point here, 1 point there. It's gonna be more like three or four points, possibly if you're putting this against alphas, 3 points. So you have there's two rounds, two firings, for that generator, and you don't have to charge in between the two. So there's 6 points of power, possibly. You know, obviously if you're using, that you don't have to use immediately.
I have no problem going to 4, and that's probably I could go either way. Mm-hmm. But, I think 4 might be better.
Yeah.
So, I think in our game on Sunday, I think we'll probably go with the 4-point capacitor.
Yep, and I still have to text you my address.
Yes. Yeah.
And you're going to be showing up around 11, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Cool.
That's the plan.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the one fly in the ointment is that I'm going to be on call with work that day.
Understood. Barry, I'm used to playing with people on call. Mamaster, you don't know him. Oh, Lord have mercy. I used to play with a guy named Greg Shapiro. Greg Shapiro is a doctor, and he is a stomach and intestine guy. I forget what those guys are called. And he was always on call. Invariably,
when those calls came in, it's like, you don't even have time to log off. You're just running for the doors.
Well, usually what it was him getting a call. We paused the game from playing And he'd chat, da 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 da. Okay, and usually after that, we just talked about playing after that point.
Oh.
Because we never knew when the next, when he was going to be called back because of that, well, that patient.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, yeah, gastro problems can kill people.
Oh, agreed, agreed.
Quickly.
I'm not saying it was inconsequential. I'm just saying that I'm used to the idea of that kind of environment.
Yeah.
It's just
Yeah.
basically enjoy what you're doing right now until you, at any moment you might get the call and they're out the door. Or you gotta
Right.
stop the game right there, basically.
Yeah. I'm going to bring a laptop with me because any calls I would have to stop the game, boot up my laptop, and diagnose things over the net
Right. And then
remotely.
from
Yeah.
there, decide whether you need to run there or just you can do everything remote.
Oh, no. The call could be from anywhere in the country. So I'm not, it's not a matter of running anywhere. It's a matter of remoting in.
That's what you'd say now. Okay. Okay, well, with that, I think we will wrap it up for this evening. Barry, thank you for
One
what?
last thing.
Okay.
For next week, do we want to do the Trobriand?
That'd be great. Actually, who was it? Da, 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 da. I think it was there it was. Yeah, Dave was mentioning. Have we done anything with the Soldra? Or.
I did a Soldra. It's actually there is a Soldra ship on Starfleet Battles Online. I started to play test it. I never, but it's nowhere as near close.
Okay. We'll go with the Trobriand then, because I think
Yeah.
that's been also been pretty well play
I mean,
tested, at least a
I
lot more
like the
than
idea of the
most.
Soldra. I think the Soldra has a lot of potential. It's the Soldra is the Omega equivalent of the Andromeda.
Yeah, and if I recall correctly, that Soldier is the one that has the dark energy, right?
Yeah.
And that was one of those things that I never implemented in the client, which was the dark energy allocation.
Yeah, the damage out.
Damage allocation actually
Yeah.
changes for dark energy.
Yeah, the energy allocation, the damage allocation was weird.
Yeah.
The dark energy. Because it skipped all sorts of systems.
Right, which is that was one of the reasons I think I forgot when I looked at it. I looked at it, I think last year, just
Oh.
because I hadn't looked at it for a
And
while. I
you
went, okay, well, let's see how hard is this actually to do? And I went, well,
don't.
this
Bad
isn't
boy.
just
Oh, crap.
okay. Change the energy allocation table because of I actually have programmatically for the client, I have it so it can load up different tables.
Yeah.
Because I have it so that currently I support regular damage allocation, the PF damage allocation, and the dragon damage allocation.
Then you need the dark energy damage
Right,
allocation.
and th that's the question to what I don't think I could actually have it so that it just did dark and it would it could, that you could actually I could actually modify the chart so it's just dark energy.
There are so many things about the soldier that are different, and some of them is like, hey, let's do this just because we can.
Yeah, but still, I think a lot of people would still be willing to play against a soldier versus playing against an Andromedan. I think just the PA panels has freaked people out too much, comparatively
Yeah,
speaking.
I think the soldier actually is the now we might need to tweak some of the rules, and that's like the dark energy allocation
Right, and then you
might
have
need to
the
just go
oh,
away.
what's that? The shards, is it?
It has shards, and the
Yeah.
shards are kind of interesting.
Yes.
But the thing I like most about the Soldra is its cloaking device.
Oh, yeah. That was
This
one.
displacement
Right.
dimensional phase device.
Yes.
which is a true hidden, you're popping out of the universe. So you not only are off the board, you cannot be seen, but you cannot be fired at.
Right.
And there's, what, I think that's 64 impulse or 96 impulse delay before you can even start recharging the weapon. And the charging the device, their cloak, runs off a capacitor, which is fabulous. Because it means you can be going full speed, doing everything, and then, boom, you're gone.
Yeah.
For 16 impulses. And then when you come back, you can't even touch it again for 96 impulses. And then, even then, that capacitor took a horrendous amount of energy to recharge.
All right, so basically, you're not going to be doing that very often.
You're going to do it once per scenario.
Possibly twice, because 96 is approximately three turns. That's three turns. So you might be able to do it twice,
right?
And that's going to be about it.
Most
probably once. Right. I agree there.
Yeah, and I think it was on a light cruiser hull, and I think it was, and I'm guessing, because I can't remember the exact number, but it might have been 16 points of energy with light cruiser power.
Yeah, I'd have to look that up. Because I had bought the electronic version of the Omega rulebook, the master rulebook for Omega.
And yeah.
That's why I looked up the ACGs. I can probably look up the soldier weapons.
They are interesting. They are very interesting.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a very interesting ship. Very interesting weapons. And some of those are just nasty.
It has interesting shields, too. In that it's got shield, not boxes, but
oh, geez, soul shields.
Yeah, and then you can allocate, okay, this group of boxes is on this facing, this group of boxes on this facing. You can, and at EA, every turn, you can allocate the facings of all your sections of shield. So if you want, you could put all your shield on your number one facing.
This is why I can never fly these ships. Because I suck at shield allocation. With that specific shield allocation, I could always suck. I never knew where. I can never really guess where people are going to be firing at,
Yeah, that is the problem. The problem is if you put it all on, say, your number one, okay. But if he can get around to your number two or number six, you have nothing.
Right.
And when you allocate it, I think your opponent, I'm not sure, but I think your opponent can detect where the shields are. So you've pretty much broadcast what your movement is going to be.
Right. Oy.
Unless you displace or phase.
I'd have to fix that. I'm just looking at it right now, and it looks like it says, oh, there's fighters, but there's not. It doesn't list any kind. Okay, that was one thing. If we ever had to play Soldier online, I'd have to work on the client support big time.
Oh, yeah.
Because I brought up the light cruiser and the Wraith, and it says basically to denote where you actually are placing each of the soul shields, use the log feature in the client. It's like, yeah, that's a hack.
Yeah.
That's a total hack.
Yeah,
that's something that can be done in the client. That kind of support could be added for, okay, where are these soul shields? Where are they allocated? Where are they going? So, yeah. Anyhow, let's wrap up with that. And we'll be talking about the Trobriand next week then.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'll see you then. You have a good night.
Good night.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
So, had a nice discussion there talking about the Caligar and flying them and hopefully winning with them. That's always a good thing. So, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.